Paper 13, Section 1, Subsection 2, which is toward the top of old single column, page 145. In other words, we're ready for the second of the Father's worlds, Cenarrington. And I'll talk about the etymology of the word after we read the first paragraph. Let's get the first paragraph, and then we'll think a little bit about what's there to mine a little bit.
To Cenarrington, this sphere is the bosom of the sun, the personal receiving world of the eternal sun. It is the paradise headquarters of the descending and ascending sons of God when and after they are fully accredited and finally approved. This world is the paradise home for all sons of the eternal Son and of his coordinate and associate sons. There are numerous orders of divine sonship attached to this supernal abode, which have not been revealed to mortals, since they are not concerned with the plans of the ascension scheme of human spiritual progression through the universes and on to paradise.
Okay, we'll see that last little disclaimer over and over and over again. But in each one of these blocks, even if it's no matter how much they have to strain to try to find some little thing that they can tell us so that we have something to grab a hold of besides, well, most of what goes on here, we're not allowed to reveal, and even if we were, you wouldn't understand it, it's statements like that. Okay, so remember what we have in play. We have the seven worlds of the Father, that first circuit immediately around the aisle, and the overall facet of deity that's coordinated with that circuit is the infinite upholder. So the Father has a presence there as that, lastly, the infinite upholder facet, which is, you can think of as the end point of the Father and the beginning of the Mother. One way to think about that. And the fact that you can think about it as the beginning of the Mother is being reminded by them choosing this phraseology to label each world bosom of ... where you take the one of the seven associative expressions of the three deities, Father, the Son, the Spirit, paradise deities, and as they are expressed in sub-absolute form in the seven master spirits, that same sequence of those seven associations, and we're just stepping through them in order, in master spirit order, as we go around the seven worlds. And so now we have the Father, basically as the infinite upholder, modified by this imposition of the Son. Okay. And the first thing that you notice is that it's not Sunnington. It's not Sun, it's not merely just Sun kind town. It's not the home, it's not just the hometown for Sun kind beings. Well, why? Well, if you just think a little bit. Now, if we're talking about just purely sun-kind beings, where's the hometown for the pure sun-kind beings? Try the next circuit out?
Yeah, next circuit out.
Right? The circuit of the sun, Like we were talking last week, that circuit is for those pure offspring, if you will, of the sun, of just the sun, that are not really persons in any way that we can understand, and not in the Father's personality circuit, They choose to call them superpersons because it's about the only option. You know, they're above, you know, anything transcendent of anything that we immediately think of, can understand as a person. I mean, that is the sun kind town or towns, sevenfold town. Because remember, it's uniform. Like we were talking last week, the seven worlds of the sun are uniformly inhabited and have the same physical makeup of the sphere. So it's all together, this, you know, basically this one hometown for the direct sun kind. So here, you know, we are, like we were already saying, it's not surprising because we have the Father in play to some degree. You know, it may not be very understandable, but, you know, we know basically these are the Father's worlds. So this, we wouldn't really expect that for this world to be a hometown for a pure unity, a purely sun-like being. It's got to be some modification to that for this world. Hence the little suffix on sun, the AR suffix, an agent of. You know, that suffix means an agent of. So these are sun, it's the sun agent kind town. They're agents of the sun. You know, they're definitely very intimately related to the sun and what the sun is up to in the universe of universes, you know, beyond the present even. You know, these, remember, these are very, there's an awful lot of what's set up here that is taking the cosmos infinite into account even. But they're agents of the sun rather than just sun. So instead of Sunnington, it's Sunarrington. Sun agent kind town. And notice how they just gently slipped that in there. It says, this sphere is the bosom of the sun, the personal receiving world of the eternal sun. See? Because the sun's worlds are not the personal receiving world. But this is the place where, you know, if they're a person and they're very tightly associated with the sun, this is the receiving world for them. Okay, sun agent kind town. Let's see. So, and then they just, you know, give you the basic notion that, you know, sort of suns of all kinds, and including lots and lots of the suns that are unrevealed. If you might remember that when you're looking in that first list in paper 30, the personalities of the grand universe, you know, there's an actual line item there about unrevealed suns, which includes paradise suns. There are all kinds of unrevealed paradise origin sons of God, you know, not mentioned in the book at all. We have no idea who they are. Okay, so there's this vast spectrum of different types of suns that have this world for their hometown. Let's see, what else is in there?
Creator sons.
So when you're looking in here and it says, this world is the paradise home for all sons of the eternal sun and his coordinate, okay, the coordinate sons of the eternal sun are the creator sons. You know, they're with his order because they're also creators like the eternal sun. And then, you know, we know about magisterial sons, for instance, that would be an associate son. It's not a creator. Now, a subordinate rather than a coordinate son of the eternal son. And so, yeah, so this, you know, they're definitely rooted here. You noticed how they made a point, since they mentioned ascending sons, you know, you immediately think, oh, well, me, maybe it's about me. Well, not immediately, because, when and after they are fully accredited and finally approved. So it's not like when you waltz into Havona on your transport, you know, that the first thing you're going to do is go on a vacation on Sunarrington. Okay? No. You're not going to get a pass to go to Sunarrington right away. Okay? Ascendington? Yes. And not Sunarrington. You've got to get, you know, all the way done with the whole paradise routine, okay, and then you're going to get some access to some of these other worlds of the Father, except in Bennington, of course. Okay, so there, you've got that little tidbit in there, and then, like I said, just it almost becomes tedious as we start getting into these. Some of them, about all they can say is expand on that sentence about not concerned with the plans of the ascension scheme. You know, they try to dream up different ways of saying the same thing. I mean, it's just because it starts to get, well, there's really not much at all. And you'll see when they choose names for some of these, once we get past the three, the Father, Son, and the Spirit, they try to pick a name that they could somehow leverage a little bit to some understanding of what that world is about. Okay, so that's the main thing. In the same way that we noticed it wasn't Fatherington, and we sorted out why it's the Vinnington, you know, you can notice it's not Sunnington. And you have a little something just in the name that you can kind of work with and get some understanding going. Obviously, the next one is sort of just up front Spiritington, and you know, okay. So you're hoping that maybe there's something besides the name to work with. again, because, like I said, it's the infinite upholder. It's a facet of the Father that's the overall facet of deity that's engaging that circuit. So the associative expression of the Father, the Son, the Spirit, in this case, is just the Father, you know, modifying, well, not really. You know, the Father added to the Father is just the Father. Obviously, it's giving the opportunity for some sort of a downstepped expression, like an individuation of the infinite upholder as a thought adjuster. But the fundamental character of the place is not shifted from the infinite upholder nature. So that's the deity. Divinity, you know, is deity likeness. So by saying Divinnington, the divine kind town, you say, well, okay, so it's a deity likeness kind town. What deity likeness? You know, what divinity? Well, yeah, you know, the infinite upholder type divinity. That's why it's all about the Father fragments there. That's their natural place, where they're, you know, they're basically immersed in the fact that they're individuated from. You know, it's like automatons in the whirl in the force charge, sort of. You know, when they're there, they're just immersed in natural state.
Divinity.
Yeah, in the divinity that they are of, or like. Excuse me, you say. Yeah,
the pool of divinity.
Yeah, the pool of deity that they're of, and you know the divinity that they're like.
Sea of divinity.
Yep. Okay. Yeah.
So, what is the facet of deity for Sonarington? I know you mentioned it.
Well, no. So again, I mean, like I said, I mean, you have the infinite holder all the way around.
For all seven.
Right. It's just a question of how it's modified, tweaked a little bit,
okay,
by the imposition of these sub-absolute associative expressions.
Okay. The individual, the seven different expressions of the three deities
are imposed upon
right.
A substrate, if you will, you know, of the infinite upholder. Yeah. Okay.
The secrets of Sonarington include the secret of the incarnation of the divine sons. When a son of God becomes a son of man, is literally born of woman, as occurred on your world 1900 years ago, it is a universal mystery. It is occurring right along throughout the universes, and it is a Sonarington secret of divine sonship. The adjusters are a mystery of God the Father. The incarnation of the divine sons is a mystery of God the Son. It is a secret locked up in the seventh sector of Sonarington, a realm penetrated by none save those who have personally passed through this unique experience. Only those phases of incarnation having to do with your ascension career have been brought to your notice. There are many other phases of the mystery of the incarnation of the paradise sons of unrevealed types on missions of universe service which are undisclosed to you. And there are still other Sonarington mysteries.
See, they're mentioning the paradise sons of unrevealed types. Okay, so only those phases of incarnation having to do with your ascension career have been brought to your notice. Did you have your eyes open? Did you notice it? They gave you a clue. Okay? They don't have to go totally mute on the on incarnation. They can give us little clues. And then we can work in putting the clues together and see what we can figure out. It's not immediately obvious until you keep reading about all the all the secret things. And you go, wait a minute. They mentioned which sector is secret. They don't do that with any of the other ones. Where is this sector that it has, where the secrets are cordoned off? They actually tell you it's the seventh sector. And that's a clue. Okay? Because what did I mention to you last time when we were giving the lead-in to the three circuits, of the Father, the Son, the Spirit, the three paradise circuits? They're ruled by 10 trinitized secrets of supremacy, each of them. There's 70 total, 10 on each. And that's that 10 is synced with the 10 circuits of the Paradise of Ona system. Three Paradise circuits, 7 of Ona circuits. Okay, so you have three sort of at-large rulers, and then you have 7 that are tied to the 7 circuits of Avona, the flavoring of the 7 circuits, and there are 7 sectors around the world tied to those 7 flavors of Avona circuits. So if you can figure out what flavors the Avona circuits, you've got a clue that the incarnation is associated with whatever is coordinated with the 7th Avona circuit, the outer Avona circuit. So, I have a clue now. Since I've been, that's one of the things I've been working on is my current area of research is putting together all of the clues that they give you about Havona and unpacking Havona, sorting it out, figuring out most of the basic patterns that are in the pattern universe. And that's the name of that little essay that I've been working on. So there'll be an essay at some point here down the road. I mean, I'm starting to put together quite a few things about incarnation. It's not as secret, as it first seems, because of what they said. They aren't totally, muted, lips zipped on this one. They can give you little clues, because the incarnation has some relationship to your ascension. Okay? So they can give you a little bit. So the main thing, see, that you're trying to put together is all the little kind of curious statements. Like, remember when you go up to the time in the tomb? And they remind you that Jesus said, Father, into your hands I commend my spirit. And everyone's going, your spirit? What's that? It's not your adjuster. What's Michael, Jesus talking about? Okay. He's talking about a secret of incarnation. Okay, which they've given you a clue about here. Okay, see, it's those sorts of things, putting those clues together. And like I said, I mean, I already have begun to put together a number of the pieces and understand some of those things. Unpacking what they say there in the time of the tomb, for instance, I can sort all that stuff out and that sort of thing. I mean, that's the kind of research that you can continue to do. By taking the book very precisely and putting the pieces together. All right, so that's kind of the little juicy nugget in there. It's just that one little word, the fact that they say seventh sector, is a potential leverage point. So you're looking, once you start to get the spirit of this, that's what you're looking for. some little variation in a pattern sometimes. You'll have seven boilerplate sentences, but one of these sentences is not like the others, right? Right? Sesame Street fashion. Do you notice that difference? That's a clue. That's a leverage point.
It's the father's circuit that's where the worlds are sectioned.
Right. Because you fundamentally have this tenfold rulership on those worlds. Yeah. The sun's worlds and the spirit's worlds are different. The spirit's worlds, for instance, you just have the seven supreme executives, one for each world. Okay. So that's a fun little teaser in that one that you can work on. Okay, and that's, what do they say now about Spiritington?
3, Spiritington. This world is the bosom of the spirit, the paradise home of the high beings that exclusively represent the infinite spirit. Here foregather the seven master spirits and certain of their offspring from all universes. At this celestial abode may also be found numerous unrevealed orders of spirit personalities being assigned to the manifold activities of the universe not associated with the plans of upstepping the mortal creatures of time to the paradise levels of eternity. The secrets of Spiritington involve the impenetrable mysteries of reflectivity. We tell you of the vast and universal phenomenon of reflectivity, more particularly as it is operative on the headquarters worlds of the seven super universes. But we never fully explain this phenomenon, for we do not fully understand it. Much, very much, we do comprehend, but many basic details are still mysterious to us. Reflectivity is a secret of God the Spirit. You have been instructed concerning reflectivity functions in relation to the ascension scheme of mortal survival, and it does so operate. But reflectivity is also an indispensable feature of the normal working of numerous other phases of universe occupation. This endowment of the infinite spirit is also utilized in channels other than those of intelligence gathering and information dissemination. And there are other secrets of spiriting too.
Okay. So, they start out by saying that exclusively represent the infinite spirit. It's like, well, that sounds like agents of the infinite spirit. Why didn't they say Spirit Arrington? Why wasn't it agent? Because you don't need to. You don't need to distinguish it. The seven worlds of the spirit are, a different sort of a phenomenon. You don't have to distinguish them from this world in any way. Okay, so it's just straightforward. It's Spiritington. Obviously, they can't tell you a heck of a lot because, by and large, the beings they're talking about are unrevealed. But at least you have, say, I try to give you a little something. Oh, seven master spirits. I know them anyway. In other words, that kind of being, this really a direct sort of infinite spirit phenomenon. And then you get to the secrets. And you notice they didn't mention a sector. it says, the secrets of Spiritington involve the impenetrable mysteries of reflectivity. Why? Okay. You can answer that why question. It isn't that impenetrable. There is a revelation where it talks about it in a lot of places. Remember, we've touched on it, in a more than fleeting way a little while back when we were reading the papers about the infinite spirit. There was that whole section where they brought up universe reflectivity. In the infinite spirit papers, here we are again. Why are they connected? Why is that section in the infinite spirit papers? Why is the secret of Spiritington reflectivity, or one of the secrets? You remember way up there in the Supreme Papers, when there was this little passing clue of a sentence where they described universe reflectivity as the cosmic presence of the Supreme Mind. Okay. Where does mind come from? Okay. That's why the mysteries of reflectivity are secreted here. Okay, because it's a mind phenomenon, a mind origin phenomenon. It's a phenomenon that has to do with the imposition of transcendent mind upon that which is below. In this case, the supreme mind, which encompasses the finite, completely wraps itself around the finite. It is such a fact. So if that fact penetrates into the bubble, into the finite, it will have this incredible holistic quality to it, this cosmic, you know, inside presence of the supreme mind. It will connect everything together as if it was one fact, because that's the way the supreme mind experiences the entirety of the finite, as if it was a point, one point. It touches it all simultaneously. It encompasses it. Okay, so that's the main reason why. And with that little clue, when you start unpacking Havona, for instance, you come upon the patterning for a lot of this greater aspect of reflectivity that they're referring to here. You know, that goes beyond some sort of a vague non-time-dependent communication system, but, you know, somehow, like they're saying, or, you know, alluding to here, it has something to do with a whole bunch of complexity. You know, what, they don't say here, but once you unpack Havona, it's right there. You discover a lot of this, and you understand all the more about what the cosmic presence of the supreme mind technically is, how, you know, exactly how that relationship expresses, and how the beings that are involved, and all that unpacks naturally. Again, where you're noted, you know, you're not letting a single sentence or a single word slip by, because there's clues everywhere. Hold on to those until you finally, you know, get enough of them in your mind simultaneously, where you can go, oh, now I see how, you know, you arrange them like this, and then you've got the picture. That's the key to unpacking the revelation. So, there'll be a course offered here down the road, some point, on the pattern universe, and it's very much, you have to work through the Total Deity seminar in order to have the prerequisites to be able to unpack the pattern universe. It's very advanced level stuff. It starts to get very technical and complex, but it's all there. It just naturally falls once you have Total Deity unpacked. You know, you can do what I'm doing here, like talking about, you know, knowing which facet of deity is coordinated with the first paradise circuit, etc. You know all those things, and then you can understand very immediately what's going on.
Chris, do you suppose one particular career path open to us at some point, would somebody can be an IT person in reflectivity?
I think those are called reflective image aids. Yeah. And I don't know, they might need some assistance, but I don't know if we can offer much to them. But you know, just notice you said IT people about reflectivity, and that's not just some frivolous thought. No, there literally are those beings. Because this is literal. There's a physics to it. There's a mechanics to it. I mean, it has to be engaged in a very law-dominated way, you know? I mean, there's laws of it.
Does reflectivity in the current age extend? No, it wouldn't extend out into the outer universes.
Not right now, no. But then you go, will there be reflectivity in the next universe age? You find the details of that when you unpack Havona.
I don't think it's going to be fiber optics.
Okay. So,
what level is Total Deity right now? Is that beginning, intermediate, or advanced?
Well, you've, I mean, total deity, it goes from upper, sort of starts at upper level undergraduate, and then goes into graduate level. Okay. You know, the seminar is kind of being done as, you know, as a graduate level seminar.
Okay, that's what I thought.
And, you know, that's why I'll also be, you know, developing, you know, the stepping stones, you know, to get you, you know, out of high school and into lower level undergraduate, and then up, you know, up into upper level undergraduate, and we'll get the whole structure put together, so you can follow some of these key things that if you want to pursue a greater understanding, you very much need to methodically build up a hierarchy of understanding. You know, it'll be there to follow. All right, so there's the three, Father, Son, and Spirit. Now it gets a little bit more, well, let's see, what word could we use for this one, sort of a thing. So you'll see what they did.
There's always been a mystery to me.
Yeah.
Poor Vice Gerrington.
This planet is the bosom of the Father and the Son, and is the secret sphere of certain unrevealed beings who take origin by the acts of the Father and the Son. This is also the paradise home of many glorified beings of complex ancestry, those whose origin is complicated because of the many diverse techniques operative in the seven super universes. Many groups of beings foregather on this world whose identity has not been revealed to Urantia mortals. The secrets of Vice Gerrington include the secrets of trinitization, and trinitization constitutes the secret of authority to represent the Trinity, to act as Vice Gerrants of the gods. Authority to represent the Trinity attaches only to those beings, revealed and unrevealed, who are trinitized, created, eventuated, or eternalized by any two or all three of the Paradise Trinity. Personalities brought into being by the trinitizing acts of certain types of glorified creatures represent no more than the conceptual potential mobilized in that trinitization. Albeit such creatures may ascend the path of deity, embrace, open to all of their kind.
Let's stop there in just a little bit, and then we'll finish it out. Okay, so I wanted to get that first paragraph of the secrets, just so you could see they basically give you the rationalization. So what vicegerent? The word vicegerent means deputy ruler. Okay? Deputy ruler, you know, so it's vicegerent. Kind town, or deputy ruler, kind town. And it's like, well, that doesn't, you know, and they were obviously kind of struggling to try to, and say, well, let's do it that way. Because like they're saying, if you have this, if you've been touched by this trinitization process, either in origin or subsequently, it's bringing in a measure of objectivity from the totality attitude of the Trinity that allows you to be a vicegerent in some sense, to be a deputy ruler, authority to represent the Trinity, and authority to represent the totality attitude, especially. See, it's a key. You know, functioning of the Trinity that's, you know, you can understand here. You need to be able to have a clear view of the big picture before anyone's going to put some sort of real, you know, immutable authority in your hands. So that's the angle they decided to approach this one by. Because you notice, when you read the first part, beings well, they didn't mention anything, you know. We at least had the master spirits in the last one. Here we just have a lot of vague, fuzzy statements. In other words, there's really no being that they can directly tell us about. Okay, so they had to, you know, approach it in some kind of indirect way. But you can run with it a little bit. We notice that it's the bosom of the Father and the Son, because it's the fourth one in that associative pattern. It's the Father and the Son. You know, and right off the bat, when you think about a relationship between a father and the son, you know, you have a business passed down from a father to a son, or, you know, I mean, there's kind of a vicegerent sort of a deputy ruler kind of thing in play just by that thought. And, well, okay, maybe it kind of makes sense. But that kind of seems to get lost when they start talking about trinitization, so I don't know. But, you know, at least, you know, it doesn't seem totally a non sequitur. The main thing that you might want to really think about is what they so talk about. They spend all this time talking about trinitization a little bit because they're thinking that might be the sort of the easiest way to get a handle on this. The whole notion of trinitization, the very first trinitization, as it were, you know, say first, the Father and the Son come together and trinitize the Spirit. Okay? And, you know, and then we think of the superadditive consequence of the relationship between the three is the Paradise Trinity. And then we, you know, we overtly use the name Trinity to label something. But you can really think of, you know, from an individuality viewpoint, where you're thinking of that's where the Paradise Trinity comes from, is you have a Father, and then you have a Son, and then the two come together, and you have a Spirit, and then you have a superadditive consequence. In that individuality viewpoint, you know, you would think of that as being sort of the highest singular sort of pattern expression of trinitization. The Father, Son, trinitize the Spirit. And you say it that way because you know it's really within the context of this whole system where if you look at it from the top-down point of view, you start with, you know, undivided deity and you divide out the parts that are dividable, you know, and so it's really in the space of the Trinity that you think of the three coming into existence and being trinitized, you know, sort of in the presence of the functioning of the Trinity, just like when we were on the upper surface of the aisle and we were thinking about the deity presence, the Father surrounded by the Son, surrounded by the Spirit, surrounded by that domain of the functioning of the Trinity, Paradise Trinity, called, you remember what that domain was called? What did they call that? I think it didn't, don't they put, I think they even say it right here, don't they? the most holy sphere?
I was just going to say, is it the Holy of Holies or something?
Yeah, right, it's like the Holy of Holies, yeah. That most holy sphere. Okay, that's the domain of the functioning of the Paradise Trinity on the upper surface. I mean, not the direct presence of the Paradise Trinity, because Paradise Trinity is a non-personal fact, and the upper surface is about personality, but the functioning of the Paradise Trinity has a presence there. See, and within that sphere, within that presence, the Father and the Son, for instance, can trinitize a being into existence because they're immersed in that functioning of the Paradise Trinity. See? So when they do things in there, in the way that synchronizes with that presence of the functioning of the Paradise Trinity, you get this trinitization phenomenon. And see, and they were kind of alluding to that, see, when they said any two or all three, you know, of those three persons of the Paradise Trinity. And then they also, you know, gave us that sequence. We've talked about how you can think of finite beings being created, absentite ones being eventuated, and let's say co-absolute, just keep the sequence nice and simple, co-absolute ones being eternalized, so you have that created, eventuated, eternalized sequence there. But then they throw in the fourth, you know, trinitized, like creature trinitized sons, for instance. You know, and then they allude to that. So you take glorified creatures, you know, and they make creature trinitized sons. And see, notice what the context here is. So let's see. To act as vicegerents of the gods, okay, that's a pretty tall thing. So in that context, they say, personality is brought into being by the trinitizing acts of certain types of glorified creatures, like finalitors and paradise of owners, represent no more than the conceptual potential mobilized in that trinitization. In other words, it's a very circumscribed, trinitization act. It doesn't have much of a totality attitude to it. It's a very circumscribed phenomenon. It gives rise to a particular creature trinitized son. So, they're not immediately going to be representing the authority of the paradise trinity, but they certainly come into existence in this trinitization process. So they're just, mentioning that. See, albeit such creatures may ascend the path of deity embrace open to all of their kind. So, they can work, just like all of us are, towards greater and greater relationship to deity, and hence greater and greater ability to function in a more objective, integrous way. But they start out very circumscribed. So you wouldn't expect them to be doing anything too profound. And, if you remember reading about creature trinitized sons, especially the ones that are the result of a mixture from a finaliter and a paradise of owner, one of each, giving the trinitized sons of destiny, they're sort of immediately sequestered. Where? Here. On Vice Gerrington. The fact that that's where those beings go, so he's associated with the fact that the main secrets of trinitization are rooted here.
Does this trinitization act, does it contribute to experiential deity immediately?
Sure.
I would think after you get past a certain point of the ascent of the ascension, it would be almost automatic.
Exactly. And if you go and read about that, you see this in a very direct way, that the pair of glorified creatures that are the parents are definitively modified by this act. And are sort of bound into the whole for this age. See, so yeah, I mean, it's very much a phenomenon that is synchronizing with the whole. Yeah. Okay, so let's get the rest of what they say here.
Non-trinitized beings do not fully understand the technique of trinitization by either two or three creators or by certain creatures. You will never fully understand such a phenomenon unless, in the far distant future of your glorified career, you should essay and succeed in such an adventure. Because otherwise, these secrets of Vice Gerrington will always be forbidden you. But to me, a high Trinity origin being, all sectors of Vice Gerrington are open. I fully understand and just as fully and sacredly protect the secret of my origin and destiny. There are still other forms and phases of trinitization which have not been brought to the notice of the Urantia peoples, and these experiences in their personal aspects are duly protected in the secret sector of Vice Gerrington.
Again, notice the personal aspects that they mentioned there. They're trying to remind you that there definitely may be places related to the Trinity that are off limits to persons. We kind of talked about that a little bit when we were talking about Nether Paradise. We recognized that, the Paradise Trinity is the co-infinite one, is at the center of Nether Paradise, and that's a non-personal domain. There may be all kinds of things have to do with the Trinity that are of a totally non-personal nature there. And those are really secret because, that's totally off limits. So, all beings that can talk about it. And again, notice, when they say two or three creators, so it they're kind of pointing out that it's this world has a, you know, has a lot to do with these beings that are trinitized by the three infinite creators, more so than directly Trinity origin beings. And so just talk about that for a second so that can sink in. If you have a Trinity origin being, like an Ancient of Days or like the Perfecter of Wisdom that's writing this paper, okay, they're literally a Trinity origin being. It's just the Paradise Trinity bringing them into existence. None of the three persons are involved. Okay. A Trinity origin being is described, when they're brought into existence, they're described as being trinitized. You know, remember we had four words, trinitized, created, eventuated, and eternalized. So a Trinity origin being is trinitized, but not all beings who are trinitized are Trinity origin. Okay? It works both ways. You know, like they're pointing out, you could have the Father and the Son, say, trinitizing a being into existence. Okay? In other words, doing that act really when synchronizing themselves, you know, immersing themselves in the functioning of the Trinity so that it modifies their act. Okay. So they the Paradise Trinity as an entity is not involved. It's just they're doing it in the functioning of the Trinity. So the being is trinitized, but it's not a Trinity origin being. You know, or a creature trinitized son is trinitized into existence, but it's not a Trinity origin being. It's, you know, two glorified creatures giving rise to it, not the Trinity. Okay, so that's being stressed here, and he picks it up in the next section after this, where he mentions, you know, that this Vice Gerrington isn't really for the hometown for Trinity origin beings, just for, you know, certain trinitized beings. Okay.
You know, this is one of the things that when I first read this book that was I found so amazing, that the whole concept of secrets in the universe. I mean, and that we're off limits to even high origin beings.
Yeah.
That's so contrary to an ordinary human way of thinking of things.
It's so contrary to humans who have been raised on a world affected by the Lucifer Rebellion. yeah, unbridled liberty. You know, you're not the boss of me. If I want to go to Vice Gerrington, I'm going to go to Vice Gerrington. You can't keep the secrets from me, you know. No foreign potentate's going to tell me what to do. See, that's humans have that notion in their head because of the Lucifer Rebellion. If we'd been raised normally, we would appreciate form. We would respect form. We wouldn't be always wanting to rebel against form. We wouldn't have these self-glorification notions like this, like that unbridled liberty is the absolute of freedom or whatever. Yeah, you know, that is the acme of the universe. And fundamentally, and we've talked about this. I mean, getting to the point where, You can actually be the master of yourself, where your personal consciousness can inform the self that's a foolish thought. Because even if that self were to assert itself, like Lucifer told it to, and do it anyway, you couldn't really engage anything there. It's a secret because it's not really engageable by you. There might be some false falsely, you know, engaged actuality that you would experience, but you can't experience the reality of it. And if you were the master of yourself, the last thing you'd want to do is expose yourself to an environment that can only distort you. Because you can't have a real, stable relationship with it. You would never stick your hand on the burner like that. That's what you have to get to the point where that's a comfortable state of mind, that objectivity of your personal consciousness rules the day rather than the incessant clamoring of self-assertion, you know, the battle cry of the Lucifer Rebellion.
Well, it's like the arrogant tadpole that proclaims he can walk on land.
Mm-hmm.
Just give it a try.
Many tadpoles have tried and they've all died. like we were saying, go ahead, you can land on the worlds of the sun, but that's the last thing you're going to do. Because it's an S-U-N. Right, you don't want to land on an S-U-N. Right. All right. Yeah, that really is the hot burner analogy there. Okay, so that's the main thing that they're trying to get you to get a handle on is the notion of trinitization, to use this little subsection about the fourth world as an opportunity to reveal a little bit more about trinitization in context and give you an opportunity to think about it from another angle a little bit. You know, they're trying to use what they can. You know, that's of some usefulness to us. All right, next one.
5, Solitarrington. This world is the bosom of the Father and the Spirit, and is the rendezvous of a magnificent host of unrevealed beings of origin in the conjoint acts of the Universal Father and the Infinite Spirit, beings who partake of the traits of the Father in addition to their spirit inheritance. This is also the home of the solitary messengers and of other personalities of the superangelic orders. You know of very few of these beings. There are vast numbers of orders unrevealed on Urantia. Because they are domiciled on the fifth world, it does not necessarily follow that the Father had aught to do with the creation of solitary messengers or their superangelic associates. But in this universe age, he does have to do with their function. During the present universe age, this is also the status sphere of the universe power directors.
Okay, so let's start with those two little paragraphs. Again, you see, so they're going, okay, so what are we going to name this world? It's like, well, they know about solitary messengers. So let's just call it Solitarrington. the solitary kind town. Beings like the solitary messengers, you know, it's actually pretty, you know, immediate. Because they really couldn't think of too many other ways to approach it. But now again, let's just think about it for a second. So you're thinking you have a being that's of origin in the infinite spirit. But if in some way there's some measure of some sort of father-likeness that's associated into that phenomenon, you know, directly or indirectly. You notice they're, you know, saying that it doesn't mean that the Father had aught to do with the creation. had anything to do with their creation. But you know, just think about the solitary messenger. You know it's, on the one hand, it seems to be this very high expression of the infinite spirit and almost wants to just be kind of an omnipresent fact, like the presence of the infinite spirit. But it has this tiny little measure of individuation, of father-likeness, okay, that individualizes, and it's a personality. See, the Father's touched it. Yeah. So you kind of get the sense that in some indirect way, like I say, I mean, it's not like the Father directly is one of the parents of a solitary messenger, but in some indirect way, a solitary messenger is a fact that's benefiting from a little bit of the individuality of the parts, the deity of the individuality of the parts, the Father-type deity, in condensing it a little bit to something that has some tenuous relationship to space and time. Okay. As soon as they say, but in this universe age, he, the Father, does have to do with their function. So, like, well, what do we know about the functioning of the solitary messengers that might kind of hint at this, allude to this relationship to the Father? Who wrote the adjuster papers?
A solitary messenger.
Why did a solitary messenger write the adjuster papers?
They can sometimes sense the presence of the adjusters.
Right, like the inspired Trinity spirits, the solitary messengers can sense the spiritual presence of an adjuster. See, there's this tenuous link to the Father. Okay. And notice that the one thing that we know kind of very directly, it has to do with the thought adjusters, who are fragments of the infinite upholder type deity, which is what the Father circuit is all about. You know, and here we have a world in that infinite upholder deity presence modified by a little bit of spirit. It seems like, well, maybe this kind of makes sense. I don't know exactly what the mechanics are, but it seems like a possibility if you just kind of look at what you do have. So that's, yeah, I think that's what they're hoping. You'll kind of just put those pieces together. And you notice that there's, in the process of really telling you that there's not a lot they can say, they do say some interesting things, like there are vast numbers of orders unrevealed on Urantia.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, to use that word vast and try to, you know, really remind you that you think the number of beings that are in here is hard to wrap your mind around. I mean, it's just a drop in the bucket, okay? Especially, you know, you can imagine in some of these areas where when you're reading about these worlds and they really can't tell you about anyone that's there, you know, there's just trillions of orders unrevealed that are associated with that, you know. So, okay. And then also the universe power directors. This is their stratosphere, which is kind of an interesting little thing too. They're, again, those power directors, you know, you can think of those as the energy ministers as opposed to the spirit ministers, like the angels. So they're associated with the infinite spirit and the Father as the universal controller is directly engaged to the Isle of Paradise, which is, you know, engaged to all the power stuff, all the energy stuff. See, so you can say, okay, so apparently that's somehow that is logical, that that's where they fit in, that they have the appropriate mix of Father and Spirit association that makes this their natural stratosphere.
During the present
universe age, yeah.
What's meant by
stratosphere? The sphere, I mentioned that last week. In other words, it's the sphere that has a state on it, you know, the whole environment, nature of the sphere, everything, that synchronizes with your state, status state. The two states are of like kind, okay? So it's a natural home for you. It's like you. It's akin to you.
But are they domiciled there?
Not necessarily. Yeah. It's not necessarily your residential, you know, location, but it's your stratosphere. It's the sphere that embodies the state of you, the state of your kind. It's like you in nature. Let's see, did we? No, we haven't. We hadn't. Let's read some more here. Yep.
There are numerous additional orders of spirit personalities, beings unknown to mortal man, who look upon Solitarrington as their paradise home sphere. It should be remembered that all divisions and levels of universe activities are just as fully provided with spirit ministers as is the realm concerned with helping mortal man ascend to his divine paradise destiny.
You know how one thing they're really using this sequence of worlds to drive home over and over again is to make sure it sinks in that this is just about 1/7. You know, this is just the ascension scheme. The other six schemes are just really not in here at all. They don't want you to lose sight of that. If for no other reason, don't even think that the seventh super universe is all about the ascension scheme. Yeah, that's the dominant scheme, but there's six other schemes here too. Don't forget that. You know, because if you forget that, you're going to be very puzzled by some of the statements in the book that seem to be non sequiturs, dead ends, or whatever, paradoxes. But what you should be immediately thinking, that is obviously not connected to the ascension scheme. That's got to have something to do. See, there may be some clues. Once you get to a really advanced stage of relationship to the revelation, where you might start to be able to unpack the other six schemes a little bit. I don't know, but there are certainly some very curious statements spattered around the book that leave you just cocking your head like a puppy dog, wondering what on earth is that referring to. I can't think of any way that fits in. I could fit that into the ascension scheme, so. But I'm not there yet. But, all right.
The secrets of Solitarrington. Besides certain secrets of Trinitization, this world holds the secrets of the personal relation of the Infinite Spirit with certain of the higher offspring of the Third Source and Center. On Solitarrington are held the mysteries of the intimate association of numerous unrevealed orders with the spirits of the Father, of the Son, and of the Spirit, with the threefold spirit of the Trinity, and with the spirits of the Supreme, the Ultimate, and the Supreme Ultimate.
Well, that was practically, in other words, there's secrets that are secret. They can hardly even describe what the secrets are about, let alone what the secrets are. But at least you have some little something, where they say, okay, the intimate association of numerous unrevealed orders with the spirits of the Father. Well, we kind of talked about that, the whole, linkage between a solitary messenger and the Father fragments. And here they're kind of saying, well, not only that, but there's all the other combinations in play too, with all kinds of beings that you know nothing about and all kinds of fragments or whatnot that you know nothing about. And, so they're just kind of giving you a hint that one little linkage, as tenuous as it is between a solitary messenger and a thought adjuster, is just, the beginning of a whole domain of what's going on in the universe of universes that's not revealed in here.
What would be the threefold spirit of the Trinity?
Well, one way you can think about it is just simply is from the individuality viewpoint, the Father, the Son, the Spirit, there's three of them. If you think of the Trinity as being from the super additive consequence from the individuality viewpoint, if you have three spirits, the Spirit of the Son, the Spirit of the Father, the Spirit of the Son, and the Spirit of the Spirit, the super additive consequence would be a threefold spirit of the Paradise Trinity. That would be one way you could approach that. But from a top-down viewpoint, when we're unpacking total deity and we're thinking about the paradise trinity and its relationship to the mother, you know, sort of the source point for the mother type deity, we talk about the mother as having three basic aspects, a threefold spirit sort of nature, see? So you can kind of see an immediate way to understand that from both vantage points. And it's because the Paradise Trinity has those three functions of totality. Let's see, who can name them? Totality attitudes, and then what's the second one?
Coordinate action.
Cosmic over control. See, so there's a threefoldness, that feeds into that spirit, threefold spirit. Okay, now, just one other little thing. You noticed something that you weren't quite expecting. The secrets of Solitarington. Besides certain secrets of Trinitization, certain secrets of Trinitization. I thought all the Trinitization stuff was on Vice Gerrington. Apparently not all of it. There's some little part of it. Although I know anything in the book that kind of alludes to some sort of secondary connection of beings that might be associated with Solitarington to some Trinitization phenomenon. When you get those Trinitized Sons of Destiny, the creature Trinitized Sons that result from the mixed pair of parents, and like I mentioned up above, they become the wards of the architects of the Master Universe, and they're domiciled on Vice Gerrington. Who goes to Vice Gerrington with that Trinitized Son of Destiny? Does anyone remember? A solitary messenger. There's an intimate relationship between solitary messengers and certain aspects of the Trinitization phenomenon. It's right there. You know, and those solitary messengers permanently, they go out of service. They go to Vice Gerrington and they never leave again. They're slowly being taken out of service and being bonded in some way, you know, closely associated with those Trinitized Sons of Destiny. Certain secrets of Trinitization are involved in that association. So, even with what little we have, see, there's, you know, you can immediately find something that fits, that is associated with that secret. And when they talk about that up in the Solitary Messenger paper, you know, they say we all kind of just shrug our shoulders. We don't quite know what's going on here. But slowly but surely, more and more solitary messengers are not at large. They're down in the secret sector. I'll let you look up that story and see what they say.
Do you have any advice for, you know, I'm listening to this and it's just like, oh boy, I've just got all these names swarming around my mind and I'm trying to make connections and it just can't be done in this short amount of time.
Right.
It's just like, it becomes just a wash of names.
You're washing names and it becomes very hard to get a grip on it. It becomes quite abstract. If you're interested in growth, why would you want to challenge yourself to engage something that seems so abstract? I mean, it seems to be so not related to your day-to-day life that they keep telling you, well, most of what's going on here doesn't even have anything to do with the ascension scheme.
See, but
I mean, you know, the
tangibly see
the main thing that's going on here is increasing your relationship with one of those folds of that threefold Trinity. Presence, the capacity part.
Right.
If you can challenge yourself to create some measure of relationship to this in a definitive way, a concrete way, it's like, wait a minute, I think I understand that sentence and I've got a hold of it. If you achieve that grip, a grip that you weren't born with by any means, you only could do that because you now have more capacity. There, your thought adjuster, thought adjuster's straitjacket just got loosened one little thread. Okay? There's more room for something bigger to happen in your mind. That's why you want to do this. That's why it's worth engaging this. Because you want to grow, and you can't. Growth is not magical. God can't grow you if there's no room for growth. You can't put what?
Oh, new wine and old.
No, there's that. No, but you can't put a
quart
in a pint or a gallon into a thimble. Right? Right. Right. That capacity thing, you can't ignore that. It's not, you know, your growth is not magical. It's, you know, there's a physics to it. Okay. Right. This is about getting the horizons out a ways. Yes.
And I've always thought that perhaps the reason the Urantia book was given to us is that there may have been some frustration on the part of those in charge of our planet, that because this is the seventh bestowal world of Michael of Nebadon, that they want to foster some greater thinking to come out of here.
Yeah, it's almost like they're sad.
Yeah.
When they write their records.
Yeah, I wonder why.
It's sad to record.
Yes, it's sad to record. See, you know, just every chance you get. Think of more about why they say that. Right. I mean, how sad is it that Michael's seventh bestowal world is this dark intellectually, philosophically, that we're this clueless? Yeah. You know?
People are just naturally material minded, mm-hmm. and they focus their spiritual sentiment on these material things. And it's just the same problem the Jews had in 2,000 years ago. Jesus came and tried to uplift them. And that's why he's so gravitated to the Gentiles, because they weren't as quite as riveted to the material.
Right. Which means it's really not a spiritual sentiment. It's a spiritual sediment.
Yeah, right.
See? You know? You take all of the self-animation out of the spirit substance, you know, you calcify it, you know, and we have universal bestowal of thought adjusters in the spirit of truth, and they do nothing but twiddle their thumbs all day. There's no capacity for them to do anything on the planet. It's sad to record that there's a bunch of thimbles walking around. So, I mean, they have nothing they can do. You haven't taken the first step. They patiently wait for some human on the planet to take some real step so that they have something that they can add to that. They're augmenters. They don't magically give you something. They're waiting to augment what you begin. You're the initiator here. The Father gave you personality. He gave you initiator likeness. You must initiate, and then they will jump in.
Yeah. Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, wasn't that the covenant with Melchizedek, with God, with Abraham?
Right, right.
Was follow my instructions, and we'll do everything. I'll do everything else.
Right. Take the first step and, you know, you'll be amazed at how much God is willing to join in and help you out. But
One phrase that my husband used to use so much is to say, the Bible should not have a back cover on it.
Yeah. Because truth doesn't come to an end, yes.
You know, so many people now are saying, well, I'm spiritual but not religious,
no.
Meaning that I'm kind of fed up with these institutions, and I know I want something, and I'm not sure what it is, but I want something more.
Right. See, they've got the beginnings of half of the equation, the independent thinking part. But But are they ready for the courageous part? Are they ready to let go of the old wineskins? Or are they just looking for some other, you know, thing to pour in those old wineskins? Right. That's that. Do you have the courage to engage the fifth epical revelation? Or like I said, I mean, there's a lot of tentative thought on this planet. It's like, well, I don't know about religious. How about just spiritual? Let me just go halfway. That's, you know, see, that's a non-courageous thinker. No, you have to have the courage to be religious anew. No half-hearted effort is going to get you there. You don't. Spiritual consciousness is not the answer. Personal spiritual consciousness is the answer. Religious consciousness is the answer. True religious consciousness, obviously not false religious consciousness. You know, they have enough spiritual awareness to recognize the falseness of old stale, you know, so-called religions.
And I used to play with a suggestion from time to time with people who would use that. Well, I'm just spiritual now. Well, have you ever thought of being just non-denominationally religious?
Yeah. Have you ever thought of defining faith personally rather than collectively?
Yeah.
All right.
6. Seraphington. This sphere is the bosom of the sun and the spirit, and is the home world of the vast hosts of unrevealed beings created by the sun and the spirit. This is also the destiny sphere of all ministering orders of the angelic hosts, including Supernaphim, Seconophim, and Seraphim. There also serve in the central and outlying universes many orders of superb spirits who are not ministering spirits to those who shall be heirs of salvation. All these spirit workers in all levels and realms of universe activities look upon Seraphington as their paradise home.
Okay, so Seraphington. Okay, well, oh, Seraph. Okay, so in other words, it's a Seraph kind town, or like they immediately sort of point out, wanted to be a little more general, it's the angel kind town. Okay. A lot of other things besides angels, like they're saying, but it, you know, that at least I know something about what goes on here. So if they could at least call it the angel kind town for me, and I have something to hold on to. And it's like, well, okay, do I make any sense of that? It's the sun and the spirit. You know, the mother sun, the mother spirit, the daughters of the mother, the angels. Okay, so in other words, you know, if you take these two facets of deity that you can bond mother-type deity to, the sun becomes the mother sun, spirit becomes the mother spirit, immersed in the presence of the infinite upholder, sort of that fact of the father that rolls around and becomes a new source point, you know, to initiate the mother, you might not be surprised to find that this world would have a connection to daughters of the mother. See, and it does. Okay, it's not being biased away from that by father deity being part of the mix. And it's being very bolstered by having both the son and the spirit, the mother son and the mother spirit potentially in play. So it seems reasonable. You don't have to wave your arms too mightily to rationalize something there. Now, what else do we have in there? Well, a very fun little thing. You know, like I pointed out, over and over again, they keep finding different ways to say, remember, you haven't revealed anything about the other 6 schemes. You know, this is just about the ascension scheme. Look what they did here. They took that line from the first chapter of the book of Hebrews, and they used it as another way to say the ascension scheme. You know, that line is, Are not all angels ministering spirits to those who shall be heirs of salvation? You know, and of course, you know, the revelators use the word angel for just the ministering spirits. You know, they're kind of, you know, really playing off that sort of, they're saying, yeah, that's a great definition in the book of Hebrews. That's the way we're going to define the word angel. Are not all angels ministering spirits? Yeah. You know, definitely in the Urantia book, that's the definition of an angel. It's not a ministering spirit. It's not called an angel. You know, it's a messenger, host of space, or you know, whatever. Yeah, so that's what it's just another, and see, and then the way the line is worded, to those who shall be heirs of salvation, those who are part of the ascension scheme. See, they're saying you could think about that as being a statement of the ascension scheme. See, ministering spirits to those in the ascension scheme. So it's a very clever way to use a Bible passage. To say the same thing that they you know didn't want to just say boilerplate over and over and over again. Yeah, it's like, well, you know, we could give that Bible sentence a little booster shot, inject some new spirit into it and some new meaning into it. All right, now we all know there's a juicy one in the Secrets of Seraphington. Let's get to it.
The Secrets of Seraphington involve a threefold mystery, only one of which I may mention, the mystery of seraphic transport. The ability of various orders of seraphim and allied spirit beings to envelop within their spirit forms all orders of non-material personalities and to carry them away on lengthy interplanetary journeys is a secret locked up in the sacred sectors of Seraphington. The transport seraphim comprehend this mystery, but they do not communicate it to the rest of us, or perhaps they cannot. The other mysteries of Seraphington pertain to the personal experiences of types of spirit servers as yet not revealed to mortals. And we refrain from discussing the secrets of such closely related beings because you can almost comprehend such near orders of existence. And it would be akin to betrayal of trust to present even our partial knowledge of such phenomena.
Okay, now we'll get to that in a second. Just don't jump ahead. Everyone take a deep breath. We'll get to that in a second. Okay. first of all, okay, you know, notice that the you know one of the things that they wanted to give you here, besides that juicy little tidbit, is some comments about the transport angel phenomenon. Okay, and you know everyone who's read the book remembers how that works. You know, you get to talking about any of the angels, and almost invariably, you know, you got a list of seven, and one of those seven are the transport personalities of that group of seven. Notice the way they word it here. See, it doesn't say the ability of all orders of seraphim. Okay, to transport beings. Yeah, you know, various orders. You know, it's just you know, not any angel can be a trans. You know, they have to be specially designed to be a transport angel. Not any old angel is a transport being. Just some of them. And this difference, you know, where you know, say a created mother spirit is making seraphim, you know, and they're coming out in these series and. There's a pattern to the, you know, as they come out, and some of them embody this difference of nature that allows them to be a transport angel, and that difference is very mysterious. It's a secret. It's one of the secrets, okay, of Seraphington. There's an awful lot of beings in the universe that just scratch their heads at how can... I mean, it's not like all the angels can do it. You know, it's just this particular flavor has some strange ability to do this, to transport other beings. Yeah. Okay. So, you know, there's obviously the fact that they mentioned that. That's, you know, one could say, well, I wonder if there's a clue, if there's something I can work with there. Maybe, you know, if I can understand a little bit more about this particular world, then maybe that gives me some clue or something.
There's more than one sector.
Yeah, there's all these kind of mysterious things, see, that they say. The sacred sectors, yes. And, and
have to be non-material.
Oh, yeah, right. I mean, you know, you have to dematerialize Adams and Eves, you know, material sons and daughters, for instance, if they're going to go and be Adams and Eves. You know, you can't transport combustible material.
Marantia beings.
Yeah, you can transport them. Just not material ones. So you can have physical energy in the Marantia substance, but not literally concretized matter. Okay. So let's just leave that there. Lots of mysteries there, but let's just leave that. Okay, and then the other one. Again, if you go to paper 30 and you're looking down that first group of lists of beings, you know, you'll notice as you're chugging down the angels, you get to cherubim and seraphim, and then, you know, it's obviously in a hierarchical order. You know, they're going down the orders, and they get to the what we think is the bottom, cherubim and seraphim. But then there's another line under that that says unrevealed. Okay, and it's like, well, do you suppose that's just they just put the unrevealed ones at the end? It's not really part of the hierarchy, or is there actually a subordinate group of angels below cherubim? Is there anything in the book that might clear that up definitively? I've mentioned this before. We can just go to it. On page 760, which is, see, what paper is the Planetary Rebellion here? Paper 67, section 6, top of page 760. You don't really have to go there if you don't want to, but I'll just read the relevant part. This is in the section entitled "Van the Steadfast," and about in the middle of the section, they're giving you the list associated with the Melchizedek receivers was an advisory council consisting of, you know, so they're listing that advisory council, and we don't need to go through it all, but one of the entries in that list is the chiefs of seraphim and cherubim. You know, so you have a chief of seraphim and a chief of cherubim, or two of these beings on this advisory council. And you keep going along, and then you see the director general of subordinate angelic life.
Where are you? Page 760.
Well, okay, it's section 6 of the paper, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the fifth paragraph of section 6. It's the paragraph that starts the affairs of Urantia, okay? So just notice, you know, it's kind of subtle, okay? But it says, you know, the director general of subordinate angelic life. And you might, you know, think, just out of context, you might think, okay, so they must be talking about cherubim. No. They specifically said that. So this is something below cherubim.
It's a separate line.
Right.
Yeah.
Some. All right. These are the lesser angels. These are this lower order of angels below cherubim that they're mentioning here that they can't reveal. Okay. And our world is awash in them, okay? And they're very close to us in nature, you know, like midwares are really close to us in nature. And it would be akin to a betrayal of trust. Well, what's their trust? What's been entrusted to them? If they're beings that are on the same level as midwares, beings that can interact with material things directly, you know, you drop down below seraphim and cherubim, you get down to the level where they have midwares. Now you have a being that can engage material things directly, can engage us directly without, you know, master physical controllers visualizing them or something. You know, they can move the cup if they want to. An order of angels that can engage the physical world. Okay? If we knew, you know, as ignorant Lucifer Manifesto following people, you know, unbridled liberty people, that there's a whole mess of angels on the planet whose job is to really kind of help us with some material things, tweak things occasionally if they need to be tweaked materially. You know, do the things like midwares do, but there's, you know, they're just for the reservists. There's just a handful of midwares. Okay, how are you going to handle billions of people? You're not going to do it with midwares. You've got this order of angels that can do material things if they need to be done. And notice here. So they say the chiefs of seraphim and cherubim, and then they say advisors from two neighboring planets, the director general of subordinate angelic life, and Van, the commander-in-chief of the midway creatures. So right there with the subordinate angelic life is the midway creatures. Also, they're just kind of going down the hierarchy here in the list.
But those were primary midwares, not secondary.
Sure. But primaries can even engage the material. They have to. So, and just putting the pieces together. I mean, why would it be a betrayal of trust? Okay. I mean, you just reflect on that. They've been entrusted with this. And do we need to have a sufficiently rugged environmental consciousness in order to be really challenging ourselves for self-mastery and stuff? Or, you know, would it be helpful for us, as weak as we are and as clueless as we are, to know that there's lots of safety nets?
No,
that would not be very helpful. As a matter of fact, on page 1931... On page 1931, it speaks to that issue. It says, tempt not the angels of your supervision to lead you in troublous ways as a loving discipline designed to save your ease-drifting souls.
Wow.
Okay. Because we have ease-drifting souls, we need to, you know, it's like, well, you know, no one's going to come in and save the day. There's no cavalry's going to ride over the hilltop. I'm going to have to suck it up and, you know, get to work here. Okay? I need to challenge myself to not be such an ease-drifting soul. Okay. So, the revelatory mandate was that, no, we're not going to open that can of worms. but
it's interesting.
But it is involved in your ascension scheme. So it is mentioned tangentially, see, in a couple spots. So if you have enough sophistication of consciousness to begin to penetrate, you know, and notice those things, it's not as dangerous for you to have that thought. So it's there. That's what that's about. That's the that's that lower order of angels that are unrevealed.
So the safety net's there, but it'd be a betrayal of trust to let us know about it.
You know, plus it's the whole, it opens that whole can of worms. It's like, well, I think that I experienced some hand saving me. It's like, and so, you know, I must be a special person, you know, but Bob over there got hit by the car. You know, the lesser angels didn't save him. So there must have been something wrong with Bob. You know, he must have been like Job. You know, just notice how it immediately feeds into that whole, yeah.
That's a father consciousness, which you just described.
Yeah. Remember what they tell you. You know, if you actually get an intervention like that, it's not about you. The last thing it's about is about you. But of course, the first thing we think that it's about is about us. Oh, I must have some destiny, you know, I must have, you know. We really mess up that thought the moment we put it into our head. All right, let's do Ascendington here, so we'll wrap it up.
Ascendington. This unique world is the bosom of the Father, the Son, and the Spirit, the rendezvous of the ascendant creatures of space, the receiving sphere of the pilgrims of time who are passing through the Havona universe on their way to paradise. Ascendington is the actual paradise home of the ascendant souls of time and space until they attain paradise status. you mortals will spend most of your Havona vacations on Ascendington. During your Havona life, Ascendington will be to you what the reversion directors were during the local and super-universe ascension. Here you will engage in thousands of activities which are beyond the grasp of mortal imagination. And on every previous advance in the God, and as on every previous advance in the Godward ascent, your human self will here enter into new relationships with your divine self.
They'll talk about this a little bit more in the next section, you know, next week. See, the whole point is, like I mentioned, you get to Havona, and you do immediately have a passport to, or a visa, I suppose. You know, they'll stamp your passport with a visa to Ascendington.
Yep. So upon our entry into Havona, we can actually...
Yeah. The other six, no. And, of course, you know, one of them never. But
see how they liken it to reversion? It's like you gotta go there to decompress.
Right, because there's nothing but climbing happening in Havona. A billion worlds to climb straight up. You know, it's an arduous journey.
Lots of goes right.
You need a breather. Right away, you know, after the first world. Okay, I need a breather. Can I go on vacation?
Can I stay on Ascendington?
No. It's a temporary visa. Okay, so, and the other thing, of course, you know, so it's Ascendington, and notice kind of right there in that first sentence, ascendant, you know, it's the rendezvous of the ascendant creatures of space. In other words, Ascendington is the ascendant kind down. Okay. And why is it the bosom of the Father, Son, and Spirit? You know that it kind of takes all three of them to get you ascended. So that seems to make sense. Also, the three together gives you the Trinity, and we've talked a lot about how the mother, coming from the Trinity, is very important. You know, the mother influence dominates your entire local universe career, for instance. Okay, so you can immediately know that seems to make some sense, that all three would be involved in the ascendant kind town. Okay, and now the secrets, you know, we have some notion of.
The secrets of Ascendington include the mystery of the gradual and certain building up in the material and mortal mind of a spiritual and potentially immortal counterpart of character and identity. This phenomenon constitutes one of the most perplexing mysteries of the universe, the evolution of an immortal soul within the mind of a mortal and material creature. You will never fully understand this mysterious transaction until you reach Ascendington. And that is just why all Ascendington will be open to your wondering gaze. 1/7 of Ascendington is forbidden to me, that sector concerned with this very secret, which is, or will be, the exclusive experience and possession of your type of being. This experience belongs to your human order of existence. My order of personality is not directly concerned with such transactions. It is therefore forbidden to me and eventually revealed to you. But even after it is revealed to you, for some reason, it forever remains your secret. You do not reveal it to us, nor to any other order of beings. We know about the eternal fusion of a divine adjuster and an immortal soul of human origin, but the ascendant finaliters know this very experience as an absolute reality.
Okay, so, you know, make sure you really distinguish between Divinington and Ascendington. Okay, the secrets of Ascendington are not about adjuster, bestowal, and all that sort of stuff. That's Divinington. Okay, the secret of Ascendington is the other part of the equation that most people ignore. Okay, there is a deep mystery that goes on with no Marantia power supervisors or any sort of thing like you have on Marantia worlds. you have a glob of Maranja substance that distills seemingly out of the ether. Your soul. Where does this come from? How does this come about? This is a deep mystery, and it's the secret of Ascendington. How an adjuster's presence catalyzes this, the distillation of a Maranja substance out of no one knows where. This is the mystery. Okay. Where does this Maranja substance come from? Everyone knows where the Maranja substance of your next body comes from. Beings build it, okay? But then that Maranja brain, that soul is put into that body, and no one knows where that substance came from. It's Maranja substance. It's just plain old Maranja substance, but its origin is deeply mysterious. No one apparently built it. It seemed to build itself.
Doesn't Maranja substance have to be maintained?
Yeah.
Officially, so to speak.
That's mysterious too, isn't it? Yeah, so you make this Maranja substance on a mortal origin world, and it doesn't evaporate either. See, it's deeply mysterious, this fact.
Any other Maranja would unravel.
What's going on here? You know what this has to represent. That adjuster is catalyzing a distillation out of the Universal Mother. Yeah. Because you're not only a son of the Universal Father, you're also a child of the Universal Mother. You have two parents. And there's two parts of you, and they fuse together. Just like material conception. Spiritual conception has a father part and a mother part, and they fuse together. Okay? And there's such a tendency to forget about the other part. It's just as mysterious as the father's part, the mother part, the soul. And how it, with no visible wires or wrenches or anything, just distills out of the universal presence of the mother.
Where do you get this part about the Maranja substance? I don't see anything related to that in this paragraph or two. Under Ascendington.
Well, what's the soul made out of? Maranja substance. I mean, the evolution of an immortal soul is what this is about, the mystery. Soul is, what do they tell you up in the foreword? One of the very first things they tell you, it's made out of Maranja substance. It's not mind, it's not, memory, it's in the body, mind, spirit. Okay. It's not matter, it's not mind energy, it's not spirit substance.
It's online.
It's Maranja substance. You can think of your thought adjuster as spirit substance, and that's what they bring up there in the foreword, in terms of an actual spirit substance, rather than a spiritual ministry, like the Holy Spirit and the Spirit of Truth and stuff. Yeah, you have this Maranja substance that gets built somehow, okay? And like they say, you're not just a son of the Father. You're also a child of the Supreme, okay? And it's like, I thought all there was out here is the Almighty Supreme. I mean, wouldn't that just, lead to matter? Well, yeah, it's not that part of the Supreme. We're talking about the Mother here. The mother is obviously the key component because we're talking about something that comes from two parents.
But the soul begins in our Urantia experience.
Right. It begins as soon as the adjuster arrives. Yeah. It condenses out of this universal presence as this little condensation, this little glob of Maranja substance, this soul. It doesn't just do it automatically. It takes an initiator, takes a fragment of father likeness, the initiator, but he touches the presence and he's a condensation nuclei. That adjuster's a condensation nuclei. for a raindrop of the mother that's your soul. Initiates the soul. It literally condenses around it. We've spoken about that before. You know, to think of the soul as being anchored on that adjuster, this rod that extends up to the infinite level, you know. And if you hold on to that, you know, nothing can shake you. You know, it's the nucleus of your soul. It's what nucleates the soul, that condensation that is your soul. All right. So there's the seven worlds of the Father, which is the big meat, obviously, of this paper. They'll give us a little bit more to kind of help with the abstractness of what we were just reading. You know, so they throw in this next section that we'll read next week, kind of brings it home a little bit, you know, brings it a little closer to home, closer to us, closer to our experiences and meaning for us. And then they'll give us a little bit about the Son's worlds and the Spirit world. Spirits, worlds. And then we'll be ready for the central universe. So it's just, you know, it's kind of a quick little, you know, for obvious reasons, because we're talking about very high facts. So there's not a lot that they can say. But notice it took us 2 weeks to get through it. I mean, if you don't just blow through it and pause a little bit, there are a number of little things. They're masters at making the most out of the least.
The transport, Sarah, that was just one of three.
Yeah.
Things they mentioned.
Yeah, yeah.
So they couldn't reveal the other two.
Right. There's all this stuff, and, you know, and of course they mentioned sectors, you know, and like Chris pointed out, and. Yeah. So, you know, just notice what, you know, when there's a plural, when they name the sector, you know. I mean, notice they didn't even tell us what sector the Secrets of Ascending is on. It's like, well, of all the ones you might immediately expect them to tell you about, wouldn't it be the sector that's associated with Ascending then? No. No. It's
that's our home. It's one sector.
It's Sanarangta that they tell you that's what sector number it is.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting if you just notice those little details.
That help in your pattern universe calculation?
No, like I said, that really is what follows from the pattern universe paper is unpacking more about the incarnation mystery. Yeah. All right. Well, let's take a moment here and reflect on that.